Thank you for tuning into the VF1 Show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the show. This is Vincenzo Landino. Joining me today, as always, well, almost always, my co-host, VF. VF, VF, VF. How are you doing today?
I am good.
Are we ready to talk about some Formula One stuff?
Yeah, I was about to say, despite no race this week, I'm kind of upset about that, but you know, it's okay.
Yeah, we should probably do a little postmortem on the last race. I'm sure you watched the Spanish Grand Prix.
Of course.
Yet again, another masterclass. Max had the Grand Slam, so he basically led every lap, got the fastest lap. I don't know. He won the race.
Yeah.
Whatever the Grand Slam is. I don't even know. Doesn't even matter anymore. But the season is looking more and more like an absolute just give up everybody else. It's a Max Verstappen show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy to say that we're only not a couple races. We're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 races in. Yeah. And we're already pretty much calling it on the season, and that's not
it's
not good for the sport if you think about it. But at the same time, like, what is anyone going to do? I mean, even Toto Wolff said, I think Verstappen is on a different level. It pisses me off to say that, but it's the reality. And it's like, you know, this is what happens. I think that most of the teams got caught flat-footed. They kind of just got used to Mercedes dominance, and then suddenly out of nowhere Red Bull just kind of, not out of nowhere, we knew it was going to happen eventually, but I don't think people expected Red Bull to be as powerful as they are. Yeah. And when you actually look at the race itself, when you see just how far Lewis was behind, I mean, when you think of like 22, 23 seconds, whatever, it doesn't seem like it's that much, but in F1, when you're watching a car follow at that interval, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
I think that's when it kind of puts the power of the car into perspective.
I think of it too, like, what's really interesting for me about it is how little we actually saw Max Verstappen on the television broadcast. Yeah. Right? Like, he's actually just almost non-existent anymore, which I get it. If I'm the production team, I need to, like, what are you showing? You're just showing a car going around in a circle at that point. There's nothing happening because there's no one even anywhere near him.
Yeah.
Which, listen, you know, this is, and we've talked about this numerous times on the show, like, this is what has happened in different generations of Formula One. This is not new, where one team or one car dominates tremendously to the point where, you know, they're winning by 30, 40 seconds, a minute, multiple laps. I posted something the other day about the Phoenix Grand Prix back in 1989, and Alain Prost won by, I think, 30 some odd seconds.
Yeah.
And if you actually look at who finished that race, there's only 6 cars out of 26 that were started.
Yeah. Well, it was also 100 degrees, so that's a big factor.
It was 100 degrees outside, yep. And there was more than 30 cars that tried to qualify also. So, like, there's tons of cars. I think there was, like, I don't know, 36 cars or something. 30 of them. There was actually cars that, like, did not pre-qualify, which back pre-qualifying doesn't exist anymore, but it did it at the time. Literally, Prost won by 39 seconds. And 4th, 5th, and 6th place, which were the last 3 finishers, were all one lap behind. So the only people Prost did not lap were Ricardo Patrese and Eddie Cheever, 2nd and 3rd place. Mm. And he was pretty close, and he was getting close to lapping Cheever as well. So you look at that, and you're like, man, you know, there's literally no racing there. Like, imagine you're watching that today, right? There's not even a race there at that point.
Yeah.
A lot of cars, you know, you had cars dropping out at, you know, lap 73, 70, 69, 61, and, you know, tons of cars pretty much dropping out almost, it felt like almost every other, every three or four laps, there's a car. Like if you look at the classification of the race, it's almost like every three laps, somebody went out of the race.
Yeah.
We don't really have that today. You know, another race this year, no yellow flags, no crashes, nothing. No, you know, no DNFs. It's just, it was a clean race.
Yeah.
But, you know, does it, in an age where, you know, this is not 1989 anymore. We have so much more at our disposal in terms of what the broadcasts look like. Technology, social media, camera angles, all this stuff, you know, we have so much more of that. You know, I think we come to expect, or we've become a little bit spoiled in terms of what it looks competitive or what comes across as competitive. And I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's not there. It's not there right now.
Yeah. It's boring, yeah, is what it is. And there are, it's crazy to think that, you know, we talk about the Las Vegas Grand Prix and how it's going to be on another level. We all know that. Mm-hmm. We all know who that race is catering to. It's not catering to racing fans. It's catering to sponsors. It's catering to celebrities. Mm-hmm. And that seems to kind of be where, yeah, F1 is trending right now. Let's cater to the celebrities. It's not necessarily, I don't think it's the right move. I think they need to focus more on the racing, and this is case in point. I mean, we're watching that race and we're thinking, okay, we know Max is going to win. But what, yeah, made that race exciting was Mercedes. And, mm-hmm, Mercedes, after their upgrades, just, I mean, as a Mercedes fan, I did not think that was going to happen. I didn't think we were going to have a 1-2 podium at all this season. But the upgrades made that really, really exciting. And I think that if you're any other team, if you're the other 9 teams on the grid, or rather 8 minus Red Bull.
Yeah.
You have to look at that right now with some envy and say, if we're trying to, because that's the thing too, when you're a team in this day and age in Formula One, you understand how much money is involved. And we'll talk about that a little later with the Concorde Agreement. Yeah. But you know how much money is at stake in that pool of money. And you want that. You want to extract as much cash as you possibly can. And to do that means, as a constructor, you have to constantly make your cars better. And if you're someone like Williams, and I mean, we saw the juxtaposition of the Williams 4 and the Red Bull 4, and it's just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really put words to those photos. It's just, it's holy shit. That's the verbiage there. But it just shows the disparity, I think, in, you have the poor spectrum of the sport, and then you have the fully loaded spectrum of the sport that's not afraid to go over the cap if it means getting a little more performance. And it's to the point now where Red Bull is already, you know, they're already starting to focus their attention on next year's car. What upgrades could they possibly have to bring this year? They're in a class of their own. So they get to focus on the next year's car.
Yeah.
So if you're a Formula One team right now, you got to be watching these races and thinking to yourself, if Mercedes can figure it out, why can't Ferrari? Why can't any other team on the grid? We're now in a cap era. You should be able to figure it out. And I mean, it's got to be frustrating if you just, I mean, we've heard lately that there's a potential where, because of the cap and because of the restrictions on the cap, where in terms of personnel and, you know, drivers, et cetera, there are a couple people who are exempt from that cap. But because of the cap, there are high level personnel on certain teams that could end up going to other teams because of the money. And how much of your budget are you willing to spend to extract these people from these teams? At some point, you've got to make that decision as a team owner, as a team, mm-hmm, principal. And does that mean that in the short term, you're going to have your performance is going to suffer while you're working on getting the personnel? And I think we might, yeah, be seeing that this year.
Yeah, it honestly is, like, it's disheartening as a fan, but it's got to be totally demoralizing if you're another team.
Yeah.
You know, how come we not get this right? How can we not get this
It's got to be. It's just got to be demoralizing. I can't imagine, you know, people working for the other team saying like, "Oh yeah, you know, this is fun."
Yeah. There's nothing fun about that.
No, not at all. Not at all. And it will be interesting to see how long this it lasts, and how long can they, you know, keep this advantage.
Yeah.
The fact that they have so much, or the fact that they have, you know, they have a penalty essentially should be hitting them by the end of the year, but they're so far ahead, it's almost as if the penalty doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, we've talked about those, the politics of FIA and not enforcing certain things and whatnot. But it will be, it almost makes the entire operation look like a sham if Red Bull is not affected by this, by the penalty at all.
Yeah.
Which obviously they're not.
I don't think they will be. I really don't think they will be affected.
No,
because
they're going to put so much of a, they're going to put so much of a lead on that even if they stop developing the car altogether, you know, after Spa or something like that, there's no development because they don't have enough funds to do it, or they don't, you know, under the cap, they don't have enough wind tunnel time, whatever it is. I think they're just so far ahead, it doesn't even matter. Like at that point, you're almost like, all right.
But to be fair,
our car that has no development is going to be faster than your car that's been developed all year. I mean, really, that's what it comes down to.
To be fair, though, I think in the constructors, you might have an emerging Mercedes. I mean, they're now second in the constructors. And again, beginning of season, I didn't think that was going to happen. And with Sergio Perez, I don't know what has happened to him. But if he doesn't improve and be consistent, kind of be in lockstep, they've got to get their strategies together. Otherwise, you could see a situation where even Mercedes wins the constructors this year. So I don't think Red Bull can get too comfortable in the constructors because of their strategy, because of whatever is happening right now with the politics of it. It's almost like it's fueling the conspiracy theorists who are saying that they want Sergio Perez out and that they want to sign Daniel Ricciardo because Daniel Ricciardo is a better teammate. He gives more concessions without question. But I'm like, we watched Daniel and Max several years ago. Daniel did not give Max the concessions that people are kind of saying that he did. So I don't know that that is necessarily true.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think that the constructors is still wide open because they can't get Perez's strategy correct. And who knows, maybe more street circuits will be more his thing later on. But as of right now, it's still a wide open battle.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Let's take it. We're probably going to talk about this all year long. Yeah. Right? We're going to probably go into Red Bull all year long. We've got a couple deep topics I think to talk about today, including some infrastructure challenges at the Las Vegas Grand Prix, South Africa's ties to Russia and the South African Grand Prix, as well as Stefano Domenicali and some rumors happening around a new Concorde agreement and entry fee into Formula One. Let's kick it off with Las Vegas and the infrastructure challenges. There was a report, or there was a news article that came out. I saw it in the local LA, Las Vegas news. Basically, while they were repaving the road, which they have to do because if anyone that's ever been out to Vegas knows that those streets are not perfect for Formula One racing. While they were repaving the LVGP, is asking Clark County to actually pay or help cover the cost of that project. They actually asked Clark County Board of Commissioners for $40 million of the $80 million, so half of the project. Hey, let's split it. And the reasoning was, hey, there's significant public
purpose related to these improvements, and Clark County will then own those improvements, and they feel like, okay, they, meaning the Las Vegas Grand Prix, feels that you're going to benefit, we shouldn't have to pay for the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's like 3 miles of road that they're fixing, I believe.
Yeah.
Or repaving. Apparently the Board of Commissioners says we don't have the money, or they said we just don't have this. It's an interesting, cause we really haven't heard of a ton of like negative things around the LVGP, other than, you know, there's been certain citizens or residents that are like, oh, this is going to be complicated, but we haven't heard a ton of negative things. A lot of the words we've heard out of the Las Vegas Grand Prix, from especially from Clark County, is like, we're happy to have them here 10 plus years, this is going to be huge, this is going to be big for the city, blah blah blah. But I mean, Clark County Board of Commissioners, they're like, we haven't talked directly with Formula One about it. I think it's fair to say no one should have an expectation that half of the $80 million is something that Clark County Board of Commissioners is going to approve or thinks it can afford to approve. So now it's like, it seems like the vibe is almost changing a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me kick this out to you. Why, or what do you think? It's not a change of heart. I want to make sure I'm phrasing this correctly, but why do you think that there might be a little bit of a, you know what, screw you, Liberty Media or F1, like, you guys pay for it and we don't want to help, or this isn't right for you to even ask us. What do you think about that?
I think what's happened with that is Liberty was supposed to pay for the entire project. That was pretty much everyone's understanding of that. And people are asking now, why is this coming now? We are, you know, almost halfway done with the year. This race is in what, 5 months? Why is the discussion of money being exchanged happening now? And apparently F1's Stephanie Allen revealed the price of the repaving project during a recent Clark County Board of Commissioners meeting. And apparently the commissioners didn't actually know the cost until this week, until Tuesday. So yes, she says there's a significant public purpose related to the improvements, but that's only 3 miles of road for $40 million. And so Clark County right now is saying that that is potentially a park. That is somebody's, you know, community improvement that we wouldn't have the money for. And yes, Vegas stands to make, I mean, and they keep pushing the $1 billion that Vegas, that Nevada could make from this race. We know that, but how much of that is actually going to go back into the community? And that is the discussion happening right now, because Vegas says that the commissioner said that we assumed that we would have to pay out some amount of money, but, and they have some ability to negotiate public money. But as far as I know, where that money would come from hasn't been determined. People just assumed it would come from taxpayer dollars. But I think that is where the rift is maybe starting to happen right now within the Las Vegas community, because taxpayers are like, why should we have to pay for this, not knowing exactly how much of this money that we're supposed to get back is actually going to go into the community versus how much of this money is going to go into the casinos, those different projects or those different companies. So I think there's reason for that concern there. And again, I think it's confusing why it took them so long to be like, hey, this is how much money we're going to need from you. And I don't know that they're going to get that $40 million. So maybe this is just kind of an audible move. Maybe F1 is like, well, we can't afford it, but we don't really want to afford it. So we're going to try and shake Las Vegas down a little bit. And that's typically how business operates. But, you know, the race is going to go on regardless. Everybody knows that. But it's just a matter right now of, is this going to cause a further rift between Liberty Media, between F1, between Las Vegas? And if the people of Las Vegas are saddled with a tax increase, how welcoming are they actually going to be in light of inflation, in light of the fact that most people who live in Las Vegas can't even afford to go to the race? How welcoming are they going to be?
Okay. To me, your last statement hits the nail on the head for me, right? Like in my mind, it's like, okay, you want to have this race. It's super exclusive. It's super high priced. I mean, people that live here can't go, like, won't even be able to watch it. You plan on asking us, the taxpayers, money to basically, you know, have your race that you're going to make millions of dollars from. You're going to market the crap out of it, right? Like, I think that's where things get really murky. Yeah. It's like you're asking for taxpayer dollars for something that I understand this is kind of a double-edged sword too, because like, oh, the economic impact and all blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine, but what's really in it for the taxpayer? I mean, $40 million is not a small amount of money. No. I don't know what that equates to in, you know, tax dollars. Like, what is, how much are you know, each taxpayer going to get? I don't know what that equates to. But $40 million is a project that's pretty hefty. And also, it's not $40 million that was like, oh, let's approve the $40 million. It's, oh, now here's the price of the project. Oh, by the way, we want 40 million. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a after the fact type thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, let's ask you for this proposal, you know, get it approved and whatnot. I mean, usually that's how projects go, right? Within cities and towns and this and that. Like, you propose it. This is what you're expecting, especially things that require taxpayer dollars. It's like, you know, here's what we expect. Do you approve of this? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Right. And then it's okay. No, you don't approve it. Okay. Well, then I guess it can't go through. You know, all of this is pushed through. It's interesting. It's very, and also, I mean, this goes like the, I don't know what happened with the Oakland A's team, but I saw that even their situation got pushed back. And I think that was a funding issue, but I don't know the full deal there, but it is, to me, it's just, you step back and you're like, okay, Vegas is being, you know, it's looking like this mecca, but the people that live there, are they really going to be happy with this? And like, this just kind of starts to put a little wrench in all that. It's like, all these sports teams are coming here, and it's like, cool, you're billion-dollar entities. Like, fund it yourself. You know, you shouldn't have to ask taxpayers to do this stuff for you. Yeah. So,
but I mean, that also goes with the Raider Stadium. That goes with any other.
Mm-hmm.
Why should taxpayers have to fund that when billionaires own these things? They have their investors. They have their capital. I think that, yes, we all want to support sports teams coming into and sports events coming into our communities. We love that. We know that that's economic stimulation. We know that that's a good time. But at some point, you know, when you consider the cost of what is $40 million, $40 million could go directly into the salaries of teachers. And I know that in Nevada, you know, test scores, they're not the best. That's money they could invest in necessary projects. Like I said, funding additional tutoring, et cetera, for these schools. And so as parents, again, watching this all unfold, you have to question, they're probably saying, we can't even afford to take our family to this race. We can't even afford tutors for our kids. We can't afford X, Y, and Z. And yet you want to raise our taxes to cover this. And that's that's not okay, especially when you've got Formula One who has this incredible valuation. Now they're considering charging, you know, teams $1 billion dilution fees, et cetera, et cetera. It's like they have the money.
Yeah.
And so I just, yeah, again, we know the race is going to go on. It's just a matter of why 5 months before this race are they trying to shake Las Vegas down for that much money? And again, we understand that's business. They're trying to extract as much money as they can. They're trying to make as much profit as they can, but not at the expense of a community that is already going to be stretched very thin when you consider how many people work on and around the strip and how much of the strip is actually going to be closed down for long periods of time. And it's already creating gridlock downtown. People are trying to get in, get into the strip, get into work, and there's road closures left and right. And they're also they're also going to put restrictions on which, you know, trucks, et cetera, can drive on these roads so that they don't ruin them.
Yeah.
So no, there's a lot of logistical issues going into this that is creating a lot of inconvenience for these residents. So you add this on top of that, you're not going to make for a very happy residents of Las Vegas.
No, it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out and if it makes an impact. I mean, realistically, at the end of the day, I think Formula One was fully intended on paying this, right?
Like, yeah,
they're not letting this go through. But it's difficult to accept as a taxpayer or as the, you know, if you're on the board of commissioners, that you want us to now pay $40 million when you just dropped nearly $1 billion on land and mm-hmm. building this paddock and all this, you know, everything else you're doing. Like, what's $40 million to you?
Exactly. I mean, even Christian Horner, he said on a recent Barstool Sports podcast that this is supposed to be the biggest sporting event in the world. There's a lot of money that is going to be made that week. So again,
yeah,
$40 million. I think F1 can afford it. Just a hunch. So
yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Believe me, I'm totally on board there. I think, I think it's absolutely, I don't want to say it's asinine, but I think it is.
Well, it's business. It's business.
It's brazen. Let's put
yeah,
it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see what happens. But at least we know the race will go on.
Exactly. You mentioned the dilution fee situation. Stefano Domenicali, this is rumored that there's a, you know, they're obviously going to be working on a new Concorde agreement. That's not up for debate. But there's a rumor that the new entry fee for teams to enter F1 is going to be $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And now, not only that, we've also heard that Domenicali is saying, like, oh, I can see 12 teams on the grid by 26 or whatever he said, 27, something like that. I'm a little, like, I'm kind of at a loss for words, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because not only do I think this is, I'll say this, I do believe the teams are worth that much money now, right?
Yeah.
Fine. And, you know, listen, there's MLS teams, which I think is a far inferior league on a global scale. I think MLS, with Messi coming over now, is going to start to get a lot of attention. MLS itself has been doing a great job growing their profile, but I just don't think it's there yet, right? It'll be there short, you know, soon. But Formula One is a global player. And so do I think teams are worth $1 billion? Yeah, sure. Nope, not an issue. But to have teams, a team specifically, Andretti, interested in joining right this second, having the money, everything ready to go, and then moving the goalposts and pushing them so far back that now it's like it's butting up against a potential new Concorde agreement where now the number is, you know, 2.5x bigger than your original number. It just, I don't know. To me, it feels very Mickey Mouse, very like, we
we wanted to grow this thing, but we didn't take into account actually growing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it feels like to me, which feels, again, very Mickey Mouse. Very, like, what are you doing? You're a billions-dollar company that, you know, owns this thing. How do you just, oh, didn't know?
Yeah.
Oh, didn't know it was going to grow. Which, listen, I don't know if that's truly what they thought or believed, but it sure as hell feels like it.
Yeah.
It sure as hell feels like they weren't really thinking beyond, let's just make Drive to Survive and blast into the Americas with all these races and we'll figure it out. Like, it actually almost, it starts to feel that way.
Yeah, they didn't have a growth plan in place.
I'm upset because I would love to see Andretti on the grid. Yeah. I'm upset when I see teams like Andretti want to come onto the grid, proven track record in racing. Obviously, we don't know how they would do in Formula One, but it seems like they're willing and ready to do what they have to do. But you have teams on the grid like, no offense, Haas, Williams, even to a lesser extent, AlphaTauri, even Alfa Romeo to an extent. Like, you have those teams on the grid that don't really have a shot in hell because they don't have the money to spend at all. Like, they can't even hit the caps. So, I don't know. I'm perplexed. I'm perplexed. Like, sure, you want $1 billion, like, go for it, but how could you say that you want to grow the sport? There's teams there that are, you know, willing and ready to go, and you kind of like pull the rug out from underneath them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's gatekeeping at its finest. And you think, like, currently that dilution fee is $200 million.
Well, it's supposed to be, but it's really not.
Yeah, we know it's not, but
it should be as easy as, like, if you have this written out in your agreement where it says team that comes up, shows up, pays $200 million, which makes everybody, it's just supposed to make everybody happy. Everybody agreed to that. It was signed off on. Now suddenly $200 million is not enough.
Yeah. Well, they say that was based on the last valuation and that they didn't expect this type of growth. But at the same time, you're a business. Create a business plan.
Exactly.
Create a growth strategy.
And this is where I get so aggravated, is that, like, you could have written in the agreement and said, you could have put in there anything, any multiplier. If there's an increase of revenues generated, if there's an increase by X amount of percentage or X amount of multiplier, then the dilution fee will be commensurate with the increase.
Yeah.
If that was in there, no problem.
Brilliant.
Not a problem. Hey, you know what? The dilution fee is $200 million based on current valuations of teams. Average current valuation is, you know, $500 million, whatever it is. Okay, let's just say $500 million.
Yeah.
Well, if the average current goes up to $600 million, fine. Now that you go from 200 to 225, whatever it is, it's an even multiplier. Well, it's not. Now you're going from, you're literally like taking that multiplier and saying, first of all, there's not all those teams are worth $1 billion. Let's be real about what the sport is worth, right? Like, what things are worth. Not every team is worth $1 billion. You've got three teams that are worth $1 billion. You might have one that is just below that. And the rest of them are probably somewhere in the $500 to $750 range.
Yeah.
Made. And that's not because of what they have, it's because of the sport in general, right? You can't tell me that a Haas or a Williams right now is worth $750 million when there's literally nothing that they have that's worth, you know, that much money, maybe aside from the factory, right? Like,
yeah, the wind tunnel
and land that they may own. So it's, this one frustrates me tremendously.
Well, it's frustrating because we talk about this almost every single episode, that no one ever preemptively plans for anything. This is the FIA. This is F1. This is teams. No one ever plans for anything. And as a type A Aries, I'm a planner. And so for me, watching this, it is so frustrating because it's just like,
yeah.
How do you operate as a business when you cannot plan for growth? And that is like, that's business 101. Every single team in, and I get it, that the last Concorde Agreement, it was before this explosive growth happened. I get that.
But that's not anybody that wants to join's problem.
Right. Exactly.
That's a planning problem. That's a you problem.
They didn't say, okay, like, we've got this talk, this show in the works right now. And, you know, and maybe this could give us more exposure throughout the world. Maybe this could give us more exposure in the US, which is where we want to expand, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So in the Concorde Agreement, let's factor that in. Let's write that in. And the fact that Concorde Agreement discussions are usually so public, it's, you would think that somebody would have seen something or somebody would have had the wherewithal to just kind of point this out and be like, you guys are trying to grow, you're trying to expand, so you should really write this in. And maybe somebody did, maybe they just ignored it. But two things we know are certain in Formula One: greed and ego drive many aspects of the sport. And so when you think about how the existing teams, how they're gatekeeping, they don't want to give up money. And inflation presented a massive challenge last year to teams. The cap has presented significant challenge. Drivers' salaries are growing seemingly by the day. I mean, even Lewis Hamilton, rumored that Ferrari offered him $40 million. So it's when you have all of these variables to factor in, I think teams are looking at this as, oh shit, if we have Andretti coming in, how much cash could they throw at some of the top drivers who are going to be out of contract in the next year or two? And if you're a team like McLaren, for example, Mercedes to some extent, you've got to, I mean, and they could very easily go in there and say, we want Daniel Ricciardo just for the name recognition. We want him on our team just to help us build our brand. All of these things factor in to why these teams are so against expansion, almost to the point where they're saying, let's put a $1 billion price tag on for an entry fee just to prevent people from coming in here. But again, if you're a team like Haas, like Williams, and again, no offense to these teams, AlphaTauri, et cetera, they just don't have the it factor that a Red Bull, that a Mercedes, even a McLaren have.
Yeah.
And that's got to be frustrating for teams like Andretti, who want to come in so badly. And they're saying, why are these shit teams gatekeeping us out? And I'm not saying like shit and like a, you know, super derogatory, they have no business being in the sport. But at the present time, they're handling their place in Formula One like amateurs. Figure it out or sell the team.
Yep.
This is absurd. And you know, I do think that a significant component of this is greed. You can't deny that. But at some point, are fans eventually going to sit there and say, so we're sacrificing performance. We're sacrificing actual pure racing because these teams are so greedy, they can't allow any other competition to challenge them. You know, as a fan of the sport, I don't like that. I hate that. I want to watch these teams. I mean, if we know that Red Bull is going to run away with it, I at least want to see the midfield punching every single race, doing everything they can. And I said this on social media, I think on Twitter a couple of days ago, that the cap has presented a problem in that I think it's making teams say to their drivers, you have to be extremely careful. We know that they're picking up scrap parts after collisions and they're trying to repurpose them because they're trying to save money. That never really happened before. So you have to believe that they're telling their drivers, drive less aggressively. do things that you wouldn't do a couple of years ago, or don't do things that you would have done a couple of years ago at the expense of the car because we can't afford it. And that is already affecting the races. I mean, I would rather see a collision happen because drivers were truly going head to head, rather than a driver say, oh, well, I guess I have to let you pass because I don't want to fuck my car up.
Right.
Like, what is that? What are we doing? Again, if you're going to have a $1 billion entry fee, that is another reason to get rid of the cap. This is absurd. If this is going to be a rich man sport, make it a rich man sport. Double down on it and say, if you cannot afford to be here, then sell.
Yeah. You're speaking. You're speaking.
This is church.
Yeah. Keep going. Go off. No, this is a topic that I think, you know, we could sit here and blast away at for hours, because it's, you know, I want the sport to grow.
Yeah.
I want to see the sport grow.
I don't just want to see the sport grow. I want to see the sport get better. I don't want to be in a position where a year or 2 years from now, we're starting to see a massive decline in fans around the world because they're saying, we're seeing the same shit 24/7. We're seeing the same teams battle it out. We're seeing the same teams on the losing end of the spectrum, and not just losing, but losing big, barely competing for a point, a single solitary point per season. I don't want to see that. And that's where we're headed. And that is so frustrating because, again, I see Formula One the way a lot of other people are seeing it right now. It's starting to cater more and more to celebrities. And it's like, celebrities cannot sustain the sport. They cannot sustain the growth, because how many celebrities are there in the world versus how many regular people are there? The regular people are what drive the TV numbers, not the celebrities. So what the hell are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
No, I mean, keep going.
I need a drink.
Yeah, you're telling me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's kind of move into the final topic before we go to the final word, which is a new segment we've added to the show. Before we move into the last topic and final word, I want to encourage you all to subscribe and leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast player. Helps us get into the ear holes of new listeners, which is important, but not as important as you that already listen, because we love you. We thank you for listening to our podcast every week. It keeps us coming back to create content and make this show better. Straight up, going to ask this question. Is South Africa's ties to Russia why Liberty decided not to pursue the South African Grand Prix?
This is a tricky one. I am going to go with the yes on this one, and here's why. South Africa is in a political alignment with Russia. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
That's no secret. So we know that this year talks broke down over financial details. Then South Africa shifted their focus to a 2024 target with a new promoter and a new investor. That investor happens to be a Miami-based company, which makes that more interesting. But South Africa is a member of the BRICS bloc. Now, this is a group of economically developing countries. This includes Brazil, China, India, and Russia. And you would think, like, Russia is not a developing country. What the hell? But they're in that. Mm-hmm. So South Africa has failed to denounce Russia's war with Ukraine. And we know that Formula One has a very hard-lined opinion on that. And so that's kind of reason to believe that this rumor is accurate. And there's potential. This is something that a lot of people aren't really talking about right now, that the BRICS bloc could create its own currency, which could weaken U.S. sanctioned power. Now, remember, the U.S. has severely sanctioned Russia because of the war. This would also weaken the U.S. dollar. So Liberty Media, as a U.S.-based company, they have to protect their own, first and foremost. So it's an interesting situation to be in. A Bank of America analyst says that they don't think the currency issue would be a threat because that would require cooperation. And these countries in the BRICS bloc have limited trade relations and routes, with China being the only exception. So it's another thing to consider also is that South Africa is hosting a summit where they're supposed to be extending Vladimir Putin diplomatic immunity. So that is why all three of those components are why I believe this rumor to be true. And if that's the case, then you have to assume that Liberty would also be done doing business with China, that the Chinese Grand Prix will cease to exist. And maybe the cancellations of that have been kind of the lead up into that. I guess we'll see. But you have to assume that the longer this war goes on, that Formula One is going to do everything it can because of its business ties to limit its interactions with any country that has anything to do with Russia, especially if those alliances stand to weaken the US dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's all business.
It's all business. That's for damn sure.
I don't think this necessarily has anything to do with the human rights component of what's actually happening over there. I genuinely, truly, in my heart of hearts, believe that this is business motivated.
I 100% agree that that's what it's, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to deny that because everything in Formula One is motivated by money. Yeah, this entire podcast is proof of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of those things that I think, like, you know, on the surface, you're like, oh, good on Formula One, you know, standing out against this and talking, you know, or whatever, speaking out against this or sticking to their guns about something that is right or wrong or whatever. But then you just look a little bit deeper and you're like, ah, okay.
Yeah.
True. I don't say true colors, but, you know, the real reason things are happening is always a different motivator. I think it's good if that's the if they're involved, like, at its complete face value, if it's because of the involvement with Russia and that's the line they've set for themselves and they are going to stick to that, great.
Yeah.
You know, good. Stick to your guns. Don't back off. But
at the same time, when you actually start to analyze everything, the alignment,
it makes you truly cynical about a lot of things.
Exactly. And I think that as especially longstanding F1 fans, we are extremely cynical about things because we've seen how much the sport has changed, especially in the last 5 years. I don't think F1 has had this type of growth and change and money motivation ever in its history until the last 5 years.
I don't know if I agree with that fully, because it's always been,
I think, on this level.
I think it's, I'm going to push back on you for a second and say it's because we know so much more nowadays.
That's it.
Right? Yeah. Like, we have it at our, like, I'm holding a phone in my hand and I have access to all this information that I didn't.
Mm.
You know, years ago, you had to look up, you had to read something in a newspaper. Or, like, where else would you have been able to look up and get news from all over the world? I mean, how many times have you picked up your local paper? Never. You probably don't. You probably read, like, I have a subscription to Bloomberg, right?
Yeah.
And a digital subscription, and I read it on my phone.
Yeah.
Or I am looking at it. You know, I don't have a physical subscription, or I'm looking at news from all over the globe. And since when were you able to, like, you could have never connected dots like this.
Right.
I mean, you could have, but you would have had to have access to this. And who had that at home? I don't remember as a kid growing up and being like, oh yeah, we have all this, you know, I've got global news in my, just whatever was reported on the news. Like, yes, there were ways to get certain other countries maybe broadcasts and whatnot, but, like, so we used to get Italian TV at home, but that was rare. People thought we were weird. Like, kids were like, how do you get Italian TV? Why do you get Italian TV? It was like the weirdest thing. But other than that, like, you didn't have it at your disposal. Now it's You have phone, you have everything. I mean, yeah. You literally, like, the phone, and I don't want to get into this, but, like, so that's why I want to push back just a little bit. Yeah, I agree with you.
I fully agree.
But I just want to add a different dimension there that I think it's, like...
I think that the drama and the politics have always been there. We just haven't been able to access it the way we're able to access it now. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. Maybe that's holding people to a higher level of account. But at the same time, how do you hold someone accountable, or how do you hold an entity accountable for things when you're directly contributing to its bottom line?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Yeah, you're right with that one. But this is an interesting topic to kind of keep on top of, only because, like I said, if that is the real reason why the South African Grand Prix was canceled, then can we look forward to, in the future, Formula One severing ties with China on top of it? And if that happens, again, I think you're talking about very high level here, but trade relations and how that could possibly, because you know there are a lot of components on a Formula One car that are made in China. You know that. So how could that potentially affect trade relations there in the future?
Yeah.
So there's
no, I mean, listen, it's all about the dollars at this point.
Yeah. So lots,
we know that
lots of moving parts with that one, but I don't know. I just, if it's not one thing, it's another, but
new segment to the show this week is called Final Word. Basically one of us, sometimes both of us, but we're going with one of us is going to just go off on a topic for 3 minutes or so. I'm going to set a timer on my back end here. When that timer goes off, your time is over. You have to stop wherever you are. No finishing.
That is rude.
Hey, 3 minutes. 3 minutes is a lot of time.
I don't like it.
But I'm going to give you 3 minutes. Okay. We might even go low. We might even go less time if we do both of us. But you've got 3 minutes here. Actually, let me actually start the timer, the stopwatch. You've got 3 minutes starting now. Any topic of your choice, go.
All right. Should teams be allowed to choose their tire providers? I know this is controversial, but hear me out. Pirelli has been the exclusive tire supplier since, I think, 2011. And before 2007, F1 had several tire suppliers on the grid. The FIA decided that because of cost issues, they wanted to neutralize some of the elements of the sport. So they decided that a single tire supplier was going to be the way to go there. Pirelli is in contract until 2024, but something to consider with all this is that with the introduction of the cost cap, I think teams should be able to decide which tire manufacturer best supports their developments. Again, no two cars are the same. Even the A and B car on the same team are not the same. So in the spirit of being a constructor, if that is still important to Formula One, it makes sense to remove this. And I think if they're going to keep the cap in place, it makes even more sense for them to do this. Because what that would mean is that teams would be given an opportunity to work directly with tire manufacturers to extract the most power from their cars, to be able to build better, faster cars. So I don't know. I think that that's kind of all I have on that. I think I've made the points I needed to make on that, but I genuinely believe that it is time. You can only have so many regulations in Formula One in any sport and still have it be competitive. And right now it's not very competitive. They can do all the testing they want to decide which tire works with which cars, which weather, which track, et cetera, but at the end of the day, I think it should be up to the teams in the spirit of being a constructor to decide what's best for their cars. Boom.
2 minutes and 10 seconds. Nice job.
Thoughts?
I can't, final word. It's okay. I'll use the 50 seconds that you didn't use.
Perfect.
To say, I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, it seems like that's the only way to push back on or to combat, dominance. Also, not only different tire manufacturers, but I think they could do it. They don't have to wait till that happens, right?
Yeah.
You have to use all three compounds in a dry race. All three compounds have to be used. So it changes strategy. Now you've got a two-stop strategy. I think the fact that these tires can last, you know, you change once and that's it. Like, that sucks. There's no strategy there.
But it also makes it more predictable for other teams to be able to guess other team strategies. And it's like, how is that fun?
Yeah.
I don't like it.
So I think that's another, in addition to your point, I think that's what we do. And there's 3 minutes. So we're going to stick to our promise on the final word. That brings us to the end of the show today, and a great show it was. I love the topics that we discussed today. Genuinely think that what we talk about on this show is about a sport, about a series that we love, and it's only because we want to see it get better and remain growing, not, you know, falling apart in any. That's why we spend the time to create this content. That's why we throw our ideas and our brain power behind this, is to see it continue to flourish.
Exactly.
And I hope you, the listeners, will help us help this sport continue to grow and ask the tough questions, talk about the things that people don't normally talk about, and you know, maybe one day the right people will hear it and we'll make things better. And that's our goal here, is just to make the sport we love a better sport for all. Once again, I will ask, please subscribe and rate and review the show. That helps us get the new listeners and get into the ear holes of those that care about growing Formula One. On that note, I'm just going to sign off. I'm Vincenzo Landino.
I'm Vanessa Orvia.
We will talk to you on the next one. Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.